is really the beginning of our Vacation Bible School. I know you noticed when you came in, there's a lot of work that's gone into decorating this afternoon. And our theme is victories in the Bible. And of course, you see some evidence that that ultimate victory is heaven. But that hope is one of the reasons why we are choosing this as a theme. Victories. Why are we looking at victories in the Bible? Well, victories in the Bible give us hope. And that is one of our themes. That's a focus of our congregation this year. It's hope based on the promises of God, based on the knowledge of God. It is hope that really compels us to keep fighting, to keep serving, to keep sacrificing. When things get tough, life is going to be hard. And Christianity is hard. And sometimes we're going to want to give up. Things are not going to go the way that we want them to. But it's the hope that we have in God that compels us to keep doing things. And in all reality, all of us need that boost to our hope on occasion. Some of you recently studied with me the 73rd Psalm. And in that Psalm, we find a man who is losing his hope. He's seeing the prosperity of the world. He's down. His faith is wavering. And he even questions to himself, is it worth it? Am I being a righteous person in vain? And that may be a reality for all of us at some point. As people who are trying to be righteous, maybe we sometimes question, is it worth it? Can I do this? Maybe someone here tonight is contemplating that very question. Maybe you're in a position to where hope seems to be dim. Maybe things in your life right now are tough. Maybe it seems as if everything is against you and you feel as if you're fighting and fighting and you're not getting ahead. Maybe it just seems like everything is going wrong in life. And maybe you feel like giving up. Maybe you feel like you're losing hope. If that's the case, let me suggest these next few lessons over the next few days can be very valuable to you, especially because what we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at the Bible and we're going to see people of God who were maybe right in the midst of a battle, and maybe like us in the midst of a battle, they question, can I do this? Is it worth it? Yet what we're going to see is people who are victorious, people who come through those battles, and they come out on the other side good. I'm convinced that we can look at these victories in the Bible, and we can learn how to gain victory in our own life. Tonight's lesson is intended to kind of introduce that series, and I've chosen a victory in the Bible for us to consider. It's actually probably one of the first victories that we read about in the Bible. It's the story of Noah. If you're like me, you don't normally associate Noah with a victory in the Bible because Noah was not a leader of some great group of people. Noah was not on some battlefield. He doesn't conquer some city under his leadership. And so you might not immediately think of Noah as someone who was victorious. But I am convinced that there's victory in Noah. Victory in the sense that the entire world was wicked. Notice the description of the world in the time of Noah, beginning in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. The Lord was sorry that he had made the earth, man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. Look in verses 11 and 12. Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. That's a description of what the world looked like in the time of Noah. Yet look what Noah is described like. Look how Noah is described. It says in Genesis 6 again, verses 8 and 9, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. Let me suggest to you, there is the victory in Noah. It was a victory in the sense that the rest of the world was a wicked world, yet Noah was a righteous man. He was a man that was a blameless, a man that walked with God. And of course, this righteousness, this walking with God, that's what led to his salvation. That's what led to the deliverance of God for him and his family. That was the ultimate victory that Noah experienced. And today you and I are fighting the same battle. We're fighting for the very same thing. Of course, we understand we're not fighting for the sparing of our physical life. We're not fighting against the peril of something like a flood. We, though, are fighting to be separate from a wicked world. We are fighting so that when the next destruction comes, and the Bible tells us there is another destruction coming, what you and I are fighting for is when that day of destruction comes, we, like Noah, will be victorious. We will, like Noah, be delivered from the wrath of God. That is the ultimate victory that we're working for. And I'm convinced that from Noah, we can learn how to attain that victory. Now, let me suggest that there are times when we need to concentrate on the immediate battle at hand. I just mentioned maybe someone is wavering in their faith. Maybe somebody is wavering in their hope. Well, the things that gain us that ultimate victory, I think, are the very same things that help us get through the daily battles, the common battles that we'll go through. So let's just talk about how is Noah victorious? Well, first, something that no man on earth will ever be victorious without, and that is the grace of God. I mentioned earlier Genesis chapter 6 and verse 8. It says there that Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Some of your translations actually use the word grace here. The word rendered favor in the New American Standard is the word that is typically rendered as grace. And so what we understand is that Noah found God to be a gracious God. You know, we know the story of Noah and the ark so well. For many of us, that story has been ingrained in our minds for as long as we can remember. And it would be hard to imagine having a Bible and not having the story of Noah and the ark in it. But really, when we read about conditions like we just read about in Genesis chapter 6, would it really surprise you if you read about the wickedness of man? When you read about the state of the world, would it really surprise you if the next thing you read was God just wiped out every single thing, including every person? It wouldn't surprise me. And of course, that's close to what God does, but not exactly. You see, because of the grace of God, Noah and his family were spared. You ever think about when you read the story of Noah, you ever think about the picture that it actually gives us of God? Now, it shows us the wrath of God. It shows us the side of God that will punish unrighteousness, but it also shows us a merciful God. It shows us a God of love, a God of mercy, a God of compassion. God is grieved. He is sorry that he's even made mankind, and he could have easily just wiped out every single person and started over from absolutely nothing. And you know, God would have been, he would have been within his right to do that. God would have been well within his right to just start over completely. But he doesn't do that. Out of love, he spared a righteous man and his family. What a comfort to know. What a comfort in a time of battle to know that the eyes of God are upon the righteous. That God still sees, even in a world that's tremendously wicked, God still sees the righteous. I think about passages like Psalm 34:15. The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous. Well, why do you believe that passage? How do we know that the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous? Well, I can look to Noah, and I believe it's true that the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous because he was a righteous man, and he may have been the only righteous person, yet despite being the only righteous person, the eyes of the Lord still found Noah. That's comforting to know as we live in a wicked world. Peter cites the example of Noah a couple of times in his letters. In 2 Peter chapter 2, he talks about Noah. And he talks about Noah in the context of what God is going to do to the false teachers. He talks about the fate of the unrighteous. And of course, the fate of false teachers, the fate of unrighteous people, well, it's destruction. But he makes this point about Noah, and he says that Noah and his family were spared. And he goes on in verse 9 of 2 Peter chapter 2, if the Lord can look down and see a righteous Noah and spare him, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. God knows how to find righteous people, and God has the ability to save. And so we all should take comfort in the fact that there is a loving God that sees righteous people. And it is by the grace of God that we will be saved. Noah, though, however, shows us that victory is going to come by more than just the grace of God. This is not a popular doctrine in our world today, but I am convinced that men are not saved by grace alone. And that's not at all meant to diminish the grace of God. That's not meant to imply that we can in any way be saved outside of the grace of God. And it's not to imply that there is a limitation to what God's grace can do. I don't think there is a limitation to what His grace can do. I think there is a limitation to what His grace will do. In that previous point about the grace of God, I mentioned, tried to emphasize, but mentioned several times that Noah was a righteous man. It was his righteousness that made him favorable in the eyes of God. It's clear to me that God was finding favor in the righteous. It's very clear that He's not finding any favor with the wicked because He was destroying wicked completely. But He found favor with the righteous. In Genesis 6, what we read there about Noah, he was a righteous man. In 2 Peter chapter 2, when he's describing Noah, he describes him as a righteous man. And so it seems very clear to me that Noah was saved by the grace of God, but it was because he had made himself righteous. And that word righteous to me, I don't understand it to mean anything more than he just made himself right with God. He just aligned himself with what the will of God is. And you know, we don't really even know all that much about what the will of God for men was at that time. This was way before the law of Moses. We can look in the law of Moses and we can see, well, this is what God wanted. But in the time of Moses, we don't know all that much about, or Noah, we don't know all that much about exactly what it was that God wanted. We can look to Cain and Abel and we know that God had required some type of sacrifice, and He'd obviously made it known what those sacrifices needed to be like. As soon as Noah gets off the ark, he offers a sacrifice. So outside of some offerings, outside of God obviously wanting him to not be wicked like the rest of the world, we don't really know exactly what the will of God was for man. We don't know exactly what laws there were. But we know that whatever it was, Noah made himself right with God. And the same's going to have to be true of every person that wants to be victorious, is we're going to have to make ourselves right with God. And so we find that Noah was saved. Noah was victorious because of righteousness. I would say that all of what Noah did was done by faith. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7 records this about Noah. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. Noah was warned by God. It's his faith, it's his trust, it's his belief in God that would allow him to heed that warning. But he didn't just believe in the warning from God. He had faith in the promise of God that if I heed the warning of God, if I heed the instructions of God, I will receive the promises of God, that heir of righteousness. Noah trusted in the grace of God that we just talked about. He knew destruction was coming, and he had faith that God had given a way to be spared from that destruction. He knew that the deliverance of God was real. And so let me suggest to all of us that we're not going to be victorious if we don't just fully immerse ourselves in trusting of what God has said. And that includes trusting the warnings and the promises. But that's what Noah did. He trusted God. His faith was in God, in both warning and promise. Noah was also obedient. And this really kind of falls in line with being righteous. But I mention this specifically because I want us to see the importance of complete submission, complete obedience to God. The last verse, Genesis 6:22, tells us this: thus Noah did What did he do? He did according all that God had commanded him, so he did. And if you were to read some of that in-between text in Genesis chapter 6, and if you were to go on to Genesis chapter 7, well, God gave quite a few specific details as to how the ark was supposed to be built, and he gave a lot of details pertaining to the flood itself. And so I think it's important to learn from Noah about being obedient to all that God has said. Noah may have had some of his own thoughts about what needed to be done with the world at that time. Noah may have had some of his own thoughts about the design of the ark, and he might have had in his mind, he might want to make some accommodations that God didn't make room for, some things that might have suited him or the family better. Yet what we don't have is any indication at all that he did anything other than just what God said. This is what God delivered. This is what God commanded. And all we know is that Noah did exactly that. I don't have any indication at all that he interjected his own opinion or that he made assumptions that this would be okay even though God hasn't said or this would be okay. Now, how many times do we find ourselves in a battle and maybe it feels like we're losing the battle over and over again because we are losing it over and over again. And in those times, do we ever just stop and look real closely at ourselves and just ask real honestly, am I exactly what God wants me to be? Am I really fully obedient to God? I am convinced that there have been times in my life where I was losing a battle. Well, what was the reason? What was the source of losing? Well, it's that I'm not really walking the way that God would want me to. I'm not really just being completely obedient to God. And some of these things where I'm kind of far away from God, well, that's exactly where the problems are coming from. And so when we get in these battles, we don't need to be stubborn. When we know we're not doing well in life and we know the source of our troubles is unrighteousness or not being completely obedient to God, well, don't stay in that cycle of fighting losing battles. To be victorious, we're going to need to, again, align ourselves with God. We're going to need to be obedient to God. And so to be victorious, just make certain. We talked this morning about two critical things. You got to know the will of God and you've got to have a commitment to live by. Finally, Noah gained victory by endurance. All of this story of Noah plays out over a long period of time. It doesn't really take up that much space in our Bibles, but in the near beginning of Genesis chapter 6, it indicates that God has decided that he's going to destroy the world in 120 years. Now, assuming he tells Noah his plan for him at that time, then that would have meant that Noah had all of that time to do this work of building the ark. Now, based on the size of the ark, and just based on the assumption that Noah didn't have a lot of the modern tools that we have today, I don't know what speculation would tell you how long it would take him to build an ark. But I'm going to guess that it would have taken him a really, really, really long time to do it. You imagine how much endurance it would take to just go to that project day after day, year after year. I mean, we do projects of our own sometimes. Has anybody here ever started a project and you started out well and you had some enthusiasm about it? You were excited about it and then somewhere along the way you started getting a little bit tired and maybe you hit a snag here or there and maybe there were some frustrations and things weren't working out exactly the way you wanted them to. Has anybody ever here just quit in the middle of a project? Nobody? I'm the only one. All right. Well, here's one person who has quit in the middle of a project before. Sometimes things get old. Even when we know there's a good purpose, even when we know this is for my good, things get a little bit old and we get a little bit weary and sometimes we just give up and we just don't keep on doing what we need to do. Yet somehow Noah endured through the difficulties, and we're just talking right now about the physical difficulties. Of course, his project was a lot more important than some project we might start and then quit. None of those projects I've quit, at least to this point, they haven't cost me my life. And that's a good thing. So we understand that the project that Noah's working on is a little bit more important than getting some things done around the house. Yet, appreciate the discipline that it took to go to something day after day, year after year. And that's the same thing that's going to have to be true of us. If we want the ultimate victory, then what you're going to have to do in the kingdom is you're going to have to get up day after day, year after year, and you're just going to have to keep at it. We're just going to have to keep at the work, even when we hit a snag, even when things get a little bit difficult. You're not just going to be able to drop out and quit and then at the end somehow be victorious. We're going to have to keep working on ourselves. We're going to have to keep working on others. This is not going to be a job or a project that you start and then you just finish it pretty quick. Of course, there's more than just the physical work that Noah's doing. There's the mental endurance. You imagine the ridicule that he probably got from all those wicked people around him. Here he is building a large boat. And how do you explain to people exactly this concept of a flood that's coming when they haven't seen anything like that before? You can imagine that he probably got a lot of ridicule. Again, Peter writes about in the time of Peter, there were mockers, there were scoffers, and they're wondering, well, when's God going to return? They were being very skeptical of God because, well, we've been hearing about God and we've been hearing about a return all of our lives. And we can trace this back all to our fathers and nothing's really changed. And he even mentions in the time of Noah. And so I would imagine that Noah is no exception. There are mockers. There are scoffers. There are people who are laughing. There are people who are ridiculing. That's on top of the physical labor he was enduring through. And then there's this temptation to really just be like the rest of the world, right? Notice Jesus' description. Now, Jesus in Matthew chapter 24 seems to be warning those present-day Jews about the upcoming destruction of Jerusalem. And I think a lot of what he says actually applies to the second coming as well, because he's talking about a coming day of destruction. And he says there, "For the coming of the Son of Man will be just like the days of Noah. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating, drinking, marrying and giving marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark." Do you see the temptation there? Do you see the difficulty that Noah would have had to have put up with day after day? In the days of Noah, up until the day that he entered the ark, everybody else is just out there living life, carefree. They're doing what they want to do. They don't have any reservations about it at all. They don't have any remorse. They're not worried about anything. They're just living how they want to live. Does that remind you of any world that you know? When you walk out of these doors, when you go into schools, when you go into the community, when you go into work, aren't you surrounded by a lot of people who just live however they want to live? And they do whatever they want to do, and they don't have any care, they don't have any concern for spiritual things at all. And Jesus says it's going to be that very same way. Jesus was right, wasn't he? Because today still stands people knowing there is a coming judgment. But just like in those days before the flood, people are living without concern. And so Noah is here, enduring this tremendously long, tremendously large physical project. And of course, he's enduring the ridicule, the temptation to just be like everybody else. Well, what are we going to do? The world's not going to change, is it? The world is always going to be full of people who are just doing what they want to do. And so if we're going to be victorious like Noah, we're just going to have to find a way to endure through what everybody else around us is doing. We all need the faith of Noah. We need that faith in the grace of God, that there is a coming destruction, but have your faith in God that there is love, there is mercy, there is deliverance. Have faith in His promise and have faith in His warnings too. And when we really have faith in God, when we really trust in the promises of God, when we really trust in the grace of God, the warnings, when we really believe all that, you know what we'll do? I think we'll do exactly what Noah did. We'll make ourselves right with God. I'll know the will of God, and I'll be obedient to it because I have faith. I have trust in God. And so maybe there's someone here tonight who is not being victorious in life. The first question you need to ask yourself, am I right with God? And if your life is not right with God, then make it right. And when you make your life right with God, see if it doesn't immediately help you start winning the battles that you're losing right now. It may also be that you know right now that if your life were to end, you would not gain that ultimate victory. Is there somebody here tonight, right now, that just knows, I'm not right with God? I've not been obedient to God? Do you know, knowing those things, do you know that if your life were to be taken right now, victory would not be yours? Let me plead with you to not go on living that way. That's a sad way to leave. That's a sad way to walk away, knowing that if my life were required of me right now, I wouldn't be victorious. Sadly, people will walk away from that over and over again, just like in the days of Noah. Noah was a preacher of righteousness. I am convinced that Noah spent a lot of his time trying to get other people to turn their life to God. But what does the text say? They kept on doing what they wanted to do until when? The day he got into the ark. And you know what that day was? That was their day of destruction. And if we're not careful, if we don't make our lives right with God, if we don't trust the warnings of God, if we don't trust the promises of God, if we don't take advantage of the grace of God, then we'll just go on the same way that they were. We'll just live, and you can live carefree if you want to, until that day. And that will be the day of destruction. Can we help you avoid that? Can we help anyone here tonight become victorious? If we can, just come now. Just come now while we stand and sing, and just let us know what we can do for you.